Our origin story here at UUCWC begins, as most of you know, in the heart of Trenton 100 years ago. William Amberson attended a Christian revival led by a then famous itinerant preacher named Billy Sunday. Once famous outfielder for the National League, Sunday's conversion to Christianity helped him become America's most influential evangelical preacher at the start of the 20th century. He was everything. Everything that America wanted to look at, look like, listen to, and become. Except for William Amberson, who was so highly offended and put off by the whole hellfire and brimstone approach to life and death that Sunday promised, and thus begins the journey of us. Of Amberson trying to find something else, some other perspective, some other version of a search for truth and meaning. With the help of the Unitarian Church in Philadelphia, Amberson gathers together what become our founders. Now, when retelling this story, this narrative of UUCWC to our centennial preacher from last spring, the Reverend Allison Miller, Reverend Miller immediately said, "Oh, that'll preach." Sunday was thought of what it meant to be American today in the late 1800s, and only because Amberson pushed against that image, here we sit, here we gather and worship together. Now, as I teased a couple of weeks ago, there's a few weeks and maybe even a month or so before I actually decide what it is that I'm going to preach on, but I send out the title and the blurb, and so with Reverend Miller's nudging, I did decide that today we would explore what it meant to be American today. That's what Reverend Allison Miller said. Does that story still connect? What would that look like today? And so I sat down to write it, and then I thought, ugh, I don't know the answer to that one. So I wrote an entirely different sermon while still having this question in the back of my mind. How would this story play out today? Who would the poster child of the American dream be today? Whose American dream? And what does the person or community look like that seeks some other illustration? I had all of this ruminating in the back of my mind, but had put it away because I didn't know the answers to that. And then I had breakfast with this older than me white man whom I was only just getting to know. We had our introductions. He passed me my coffee. I asked, "How are you?" in that familiar exchange of getting to know one another. And he responded, "Well, it's tough to be a white man in America today." I am not a white man in America today, so I took a sip of my coffee and I leaned in and I asked, "Do you want to say more about that?" The presidential debate hadn't finished 12 hours before, and clearly for every moment of anger and outrage I had felt in response to the comments about women or what it means to be a woman or what is expected in order to be the right kind of woman, this man across from me was feeling the pangs of being represented by someone with whom he shared little other than demographics. It is, I imagine, tough to be a white man in America today for some. Or maybe I can say more comfortably, I can see how having one's given identity criticized, and an identity that has always been the illustration of power or being neutral, I can see how that can be a feeling of surprise for some, fear-inducing for others, and outright earth-shattering for others still. For many, masculinity is the most identifiable culprit when we see acts of violence, emotional detachment, posturing, and the recent charge to dismantle the 19th Amendment. An extreme example, maybe, but just a more overt version of what we see in pay and practice. And to be white in America today, well, we know that story from much of the good work that we've been doing as part of this faith community. In recent years, our national conversation has changed to focusing on the far too long degradation of women and people of color. And this focus hasn't come about because of an Oprah's Book Club book that's enlightened all through story and theory. It's because in every space of acute oppression that we've seen on the news or read about or seen in our own lives, of significant despair, of systematic and systemic power or power over, toxic masculinity is embedded at the core. Women have been the target of gun violence because a young white man never got the attention he believed he deserved. Stating Black Lives Matter threatens something deep in the soul for those who don't see themselves reflected. We have a presidential candidate accused of sexual assault, and the response is that the alleged victim's home addresses and phone numbers are publicized so that lives can be threatened. It's much more subtle, but still as powerful. We can even name the example of books like Lean In that insist women must replicate the tone and practices of masculinity in order to have power. I can't imagine what it means to be a white man in America today. The thing you couldn't choose now seems to demonize you. The identity and way of moving throughout the world that you're now being told is to blame for centuries of destruction and colonization all on your broad shoulders. And I want to be really clear, I'm not speaking sarcastically when I say any of this. This is a spiritual crisis for many of whom we love. That man I met with, he wore exhaustion on his face as he spoke of the responsibility in trying to show the world a different version of white maleness. So, yes, a spiritual crisis. But one with such great importance and purpose. Because it means, in my mind, that for the first time in American history, and longer histories of a great many other nations, we are taking seriously the spiritual and daily lived experience of others too. You see, I know the exhaustion of trying to be something other than the stereotype or expectation of a given group. As does every woman who wants to wear a dress without comment or touch. As does every progressive clergy person who wants not to represent the Crusades. As does every person of color who needs to desperately discipline their child so their behavior doesn't become reason to be killed. As does every non-straight person who wants their sexual orientation to seem assimilated and safe. As does every poor person who doesn't want to be dismissed as ignorant. None of us who have had to manage and navigate that responsibility would wish for it. And to have to try it on for the first time, I imagine it is tough for some to be a white man in America today. Andrew Reiner recently published a piece in the New York Times entitled "The Fear of Having a Son." Did anyone read this? So I've read it like 5 times in the last 3 days. He says, "When my son Michaela was born 5 years ago, my college students asked how it felt to be a new father. Terrifying, I blurted out. All I can think about is bullying." Silence and perplexed looks filled the room. "Your child was just born," a female student said. "I know," I responded, "but this boy's going to be raised to feel and express his vulnerability. That's a curse in this culture." What worried me just as much was the flip side realization, he continued. Whatever my wife and I tried to do to shape my son's masculine identity would compete against such cultural norms as a postured indifference to school, which can lead to lower grades, graduation rates, and academic motivation. a sports and gaming culture that exalt alpha domination and aggressive male reflexes, and a tight-lipped John Wayne ethos that breeds alienation and too often depression. All of the dread and loathing I had always felt about the limiting script of traditional masculine norms came flooding back. I was faced with one of my biggest fears about parenthood: having a son. Now, I know that many of you here have heard me joke that when Tara and I found out that we were having a boy, I sighed a great sigh of relief. No teenage years in which she'll hate me. You laugh knowingly, parents of girls. No high skirts or low tops in which I'd have to explain what the word provocative means. To provoke. To have to second guess every article of clothing so as to not wonder if you've encouraged the look, the call, the touch. No fear of her walking back to her dorm room or encouraging the freedoms of college in 18 years. A boy would be simpler. He could express his body without concern. His rambunctious activity and disruption would be passed off as him being a boy. And certainly no awkward conversations about consent, right? We don't do that with our boys, right? We wouldn't have to change the gender of every single character in every single children's book so that he recognized himself in just some of the stories of the world. I've remained almost deafeningly silent on the recent conversations surrounding sexual assault, the commentary on women's bodies, and the criticisms of a voice. A suit that magically becomes a pantsuit once a woman steps into it one leg at a time, a decision to stay home or to go to work. And when some have asked why, I've responded with honesty and selfishness. I've already asked this congregation to think and feel enough hard stuff. Church should also be about joy. I don't want to be a wet blanket. In other words, it has felt safer for me to stand in this pulpit and speak about white privilege and the dismantling of institutions and systems, about black and white bodies, about God or the language of metaphor, than as a young lesbian still relatively new to this congregation, wonder out loud about maleness and masculinity. In a congregation that has endless examples of good, emotionally literate, and thoughtful men, of Romeos who come together to wonder about the spiritual, or if there is the spiritual, who are their own pastoral care team for one another and for their larger community. Even so, even within this beautiful culture of good examples, it has felt dangerous to speak these words. So now I come to you having to believe that within that fear and that hesitancy, there must be a sermon to share. In the 2+ years I have been with you, I have never held back my trust that we can exchange in an honest and vulnerable unveiling of the world or of our lives. So why does this feel so risky? I do wonder what it means to be American today. And especially within a denomination such as ours that has always followed the best, most courageous strains of who we want to be as a people, inside and outside of our sanctuary walls, modeled so often by our country's leadership and vision. Our Unitarian forefathers, after all, were signers of the Declaration of Independence. It is in our roots to be aligned with the hopes and optimism of what this country stands for. But we are in an odd time. The regression is much louder than the potential progression, more fearful of what has already been unfolding, and our mentors for how to move forward, let alone heal from the whiplash of this last year. Well, we don't really know who those mentors are, do we? So maybe that's where we start. Switching roles with the nation and modeling the vision and hope we demand to see rather than following suit. For those of us raising boys and those who are men, it is our turn to change what it means to walk through the world as a man, as a white man, as partners and parents and siblings and friends with those in spiritual crisis. Amberson, I think, would be proud. For the women and men who carry the scars of physical violence, we see you. For the men unsure of any other way, we will walk with you. And for the abrasion that comes by way of language, the depletion of self-worth, interruption, and explanation, may we begin again in love. May it be so, may we make it so, and blessed be.